Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Now celebrating 5 years of burning up the airwaves.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place.
You're listening to the voice of small business.
This is Dr. Fraser Crane. I'm listening.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for hanging around with me this morning. I appreciate it. 800-531-3815. Robert D. Manning is the author of Credit Card Nation, The Consequences of America's Addiction to Credit. Bob is also a professor at Rochester Institute of Technology. Bob, welcome back to the show.
Well, it's a pleasure to be back.
It's good to have you back. As always, we miss you.
Well, there's been lots of things going on. There's lots to talk about.
Yeah, there is. And I wanted to get your perspective on how things are. I told the audience that you'd be with us, joining us to talk to us about how you see things going out there in the economy. And why don't you give us your take on how things are going?
Well, you know, a lot of us were concerned that we might have what was called either a double-dip recession or at least concerns about what a jobless recovery would look like, and
right.
I think we're seeing a little bit of both. I think what was really intriguing to me is last week I hosted a business labor roundtable, and looking at what the transformation of Rochester and the kind of decline of the big three anchors and
right.
what it means to small business to take up slack. So that was quite an instructive experience.
Well, I would think the interesting thing is, now you've got, Kodak, Xerox, and IBM right there?
That's
nearby.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I used to work for Xerox a long time ago. And, of course, Xerox is having its trouble. I don't know what Kodak's doing. IBM's doing okay, but they're changing. It seems to me that they're changing the way that they do business with regard to how they employ their people. They don't put them all in 20 tall buildings around the country. Many of them work out of their homes around the country.
Yeah, and
that,
IBM,
that's affected,
of course,
that's affected Rochester, hasn't it?
The IBM is a little bit different. Our third big person is Bosch and Lomb.
Uh-huh.
And IBM has certainly taken a smarter approach. And I think in the context of globalization, what's been really important to understand is that in the past, and with business cycles and resumption of expansion of trade and commerce, that with the prosperity of the bigger corporations, it was just presumed that jobs would rebound and that the local economy would be restored to health.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, what we're seeing with globalization, of course, is that those jobs will never come back. They're relocating outside the country. And more importantly, you know, last week's Business Week really, I think, was a wake-up call for many Americans, is that we're talking about the second generation of white-collar, highly skilled engineering software jobs, et cetera, that are now being relocated outside of the United States. So I think as we look at what's happening in the economy, we've talked about a decline in jobs of over 1.5%. Over 2 million jobs have been lost during this recession since March of 2001. And I think there's a real issue here of saying, let's be honest, folks, jobs come from small business. They're not going to come from the big corporate BMS. And there's also a reality that there were a lot of subcontracting jobs that were available from the contraction of big corporations. But in many ways, those were just outsourced jobs. We need to start thinking smarter. We need to start thinking not just of how we're going to replace big corporations, but how we're leaner and meaner and thinking a lot better than they are and can respond a lot quicker.
Well, you know, you're singing my song. And the thing, though, I think we need to, the perspective, though, that I think we need to have on this, Bob, is that really the jobs started being lost almost 3 years ago. Second quarter, beginning of the second quarter, actually maybe first quarter of 2000, the jobs started being lost with all the dot-com collapse. And it became, as you, I know that you know about the fourth quarter 2000. I mean, that was a really tough quarter, and we've just continued to lose jobs, and the economy's continued to languish over the last 2 or 3 years. But you're right about the jobless recovery, and the thing that we're seeing right now is that the people, as you indicated, there are people out there who will never again work in the jobs that they had, in the last job that they had. Now, when I've been saying that, I've been focusing more on manufacturing jobs. But what you're bringing to the table is more white-collar jobs.
Well, that's what makes this new. I mean, as we went from kind of a sectoral decline with the bust of the dot-coms in 2000 to now, we've gone to a generalized decline. And now we had this discussion over the last year about whether simply manipulating the interest rates would lead to a generalized return of the business cycle. And, of course, I had demurred and said that this was going to be a much different kind of recession.
Right.
And that's
what's
happening.
Stand by, Bob. We're going to take a quick break. Robert D. Manning, ladies and gentlemen, the author of Credit Card Nation. We'll be right back after these messages. It's 22. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com, jbsba.com. Our phone number, 800-531-3815. Robert D. Manning is our guest. Bob is the author of Credit Card Nation, The Consequences of America's Addiction to Credit. Bob, tell us where the book's available, please.
Well, certainly available at your big bookstores, but always available online.
All right, and the last name is spelled with the three N's. M-A-N-N-I-N-G.
That's correct.
Bob, what about a website?
We're talking about creditcardnation.com. That's one word, and most of your questions will be answered.
Okay. Check it out when you get a chance. And they can they read more, a little bit about the book on your
book
site?
Book is available online. Take advantage of our interactive Debt Zapper calculator. Lots of send your questions to the bulletin board and look at the most recent legislation.
All right, that sounds good. Okay, let's get back into the jobless recovery issue that we were just talking about and see where that leads us. Bob, the thing that I think is really going to be a long-lasting situation in America is that we've got people. To me, you've got people. If you're a white-collar person, you've got some skills that you can transfer over to another kind of a white-collar job, maybe even your own business. That is something I want to come back to in a little bit. But if you're a blue-collar, a lot of the skills that you had are not needed anymore, and you've got to retool. And that's what I'm worried about, Bob. Is that justified?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're talking about at a minimum now somebody's going to have six jobs in their career. When you look at the half-life of how long your job skill is marketable, it's shrinking shorter and shorter. And the question is, for lower-skilled workers who have the least amount of education, where are they going to be able to have the opportunity to acquire these new job skills?
Well, the only thing I can tell people who are in that category is start getting educated, because the marketplace is not going to come back to you. It's a moving train, and it's moving on, and you need to get some computer skills. You need to get some skills doing something so that you can compete in the 21st century. Isn't it interesting that all this has seemed to happen, Bob, as the century turned? Isn't it interesting how all these changes have coincided with a century change?
Well, and what's striking about the century change is it's as if there's been this interaction effect, and everything has just hit the ground running so fast. And the changes as they're occurring, what might have taken 10 years now is taking 4.5 years. And it seems like the next cycle is going to be shorter and shorter. There are other things going on right now during this recovery we haven't mentioned also. We're talking about flat wage growth.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the assumption of stimulating the economy, of whether it's going to be rich people or working people. But nowhere do you hear anything in any of the job prescriptions right now about how we're going to help small business in terms of being the core of this economy. One of the issues that we'd mentioned over the break was the role now that China is playing. And so much right now of foreign policy in terms of placating the Chinese is having such a dramatic impact on domestic policy. But since it's not part of the news, a lot of people just aren't making the connections.
Well, and you're mentioning small business. Small business is the stepchild of the marketplace. You hear politicians speaking about it more than they ever did before, it's not exactly that we're persona non grata like we have been in the past. We're not as marginalized as we used to be, but we're still not up on the radar screen where we ought to be, where the government is really seriously focusing on policy that will help small business owners do what they do, and that's create jobs and create opportunity.
Well, sure, and you know, one of the big problems is that small businesses as a lobbying group, they don't quite have the cachet of
we're
a herd
of cats, Bob.
Yeah, it's not like having a Kodak or IBM walking into the door. And I think that's really one of the problems with local political situations is the mayor's office looks for a big fix, and they're expecting that big, quick fix to come from a big company. And they're thinking, well, it's just a matter of time. The small guys will come through at the end, but you know, we don't have to worry about them. We have to worry right now about stemming the flow, and that flow is perceived as only being driven by big corporations.
And those opportunities are becoming less and less in America, aren't they?
Well, I think that's really what's striking now about metropolitan economies is that now policymakers are realizing that they're looking at big corporations who are increasingly seeing themselves and their survival as outside of the region. And the assumption has always been, if you can just bring them back to health, the smaller companies that help serve them will just simply follow accordingly. So instead of following up a recovery, the real question is, could small business be driving a recovery? And
well,
that's really not part of our discussion.
The marketplace is already doing all the things that you're talking about. The problem is the government is trying to regulate it, trying to influence it by public policy. That's 20th century thinking. Basically, our government is still not in the 21st century with regard to the marketplace. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if we look at our two most recent Secretary of Treasuries, I mean, we're not talking about 21st century experience here, and I think that's so disconcerting to so many of us who see how quickly these changes are occurring and want to talk to leaders of industry that are there with us and understand what this means to them, not the old smokestack industries. And I think that's a frustration now that is becoming more and more apparent.
Bob, we're going to take a break in a few seconds. When we come back, as we wrap up the hour, I'd like for you to talk to us about the situation with credit cards around the world. That's a topic that I know you're focusing on, and we're going to get you to give us a little bit of information on that in just a few minutes. We'll be right back after this short break. Intel, stay with us with Robert Manning. We're back at 7 till. Robert D. Manning is a professor of humanities at Rochester Institute of Technology in beautiful downtown Rochester, New York. He's the author of Credit Card Nation. Bob, you got a new book coming out?
Next fall, we're going to be looking at the power of plastic.
Power of plastic. You're going to launch that book on this show, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Talk to us about plastic. What's it doing? What's plastic doing out there right now, and how is it affecting our lives and our marketplace?
Well, you know, in an interesting way, I think that for small businesses, the democratization of credit through credit cards has been successful with the creation of small business credit cards with a lot of related business services at a moderate cost. I mean, really helping people in a pinch if they're facing some cash flow bottlenecks. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we're at record low levels, and of course banks are loath to make loans to small business people in an economic situation like this, and that's a real problem, because no matter how low the Federal Reserve lowers the discount rate, you can't make banks make those loans.
Well, especially when they can take their money and go somewhere else with it and be a little big, buy treasuries and feel safer with it.
Well, or, you know, with the cost of money so low, you can send out another 2 billion credit card applications, and at an average rate of 16% return, you can't lose. And, of course, that's one of the problems. And that's one of the reasons two of the reasons that we're seeing this huge surge and increase of credit card growth outside of the United States.
Outside of the United States.
Now,
they're looking for new markets, aren't they?
China is the second largest MasterCard market in the world.
Is that right?
Close to eclipsing 300 million clients. Or 10% of Chinese transactions now are conducted retail through credit cards.
I've been saying for some time now that over the next 10 years, China is going to turn into an economic tsunami that's going to be a paradigm shift for it's going to actually create many paradigm shifts. And my question to you is, how much is plastic going to contribute to that?
Well, I think we've just scratched the surface, because the Chinese goal over the next 10 years is literally to quadruple their middle class from 100 million to 400 million. And they're really on the road to that. And credit cards plays a central role. And actually, you're seeing it accelerate, not yet in China, but in nearby countries such as Singapore, and Malaysia, and even Japan. So credit cards have transformed. For example, Korea, which is the fastest growing use of credit cards in the world, was the first country to translate my book. So there's a real sense here right now with policymakers that in this global economy, what's truly unique is that for the first time, low-wage workers are not only producing products for the global economy at a cheap price, but they have credit cards now and can buy
them. Let me ask you this question. Did you know that South Korea is 100%, the households in South Korea are 100% hardwired to broadband?
Oh, that's amazing.
And the government did that. I wonder if that had anything to do with the proliferation of credit over there, credit cards over there.
Well, one of the problems is an intergenerational shift now, where so many of the parents and grandparents had those World War II experiences and were really cautious and conservative about spending, and were more concerned about saving and investing for retirement. Now you're seeing their children who are saying, oh, no, those are old school values.
Well, with broadband connection to the Internet, to the world, to the world's marketplaces, they can now buy online with their credit cards in a way that they really didn't have access to in the past.
Well, and not only that, but they now understand what are the options in terms of not just the domestic brand, but international brands, and also global trends.
And folks, I hope you're seeing what we're picking up on what we're talking about here. We're talking about new markets, but also not only new markets to sell to, but new markets that are going to compete with us.
And just because they don't read English doesn't mean they don't understand what's going on in the United States.
That's
they
right.
may be reading Business Week Southeast Asia, and via the Internet, their perception of what's going on in the United States isn't necessarily responding to distortions of the local politics.
Right.
They're going to be jumping right into the market based on their business models. And this time they're in it to win. And that's what I think this recession is most disturbing to me, is that I think the American economy should have come out a much stronger and smarter. And instead, I think the global economy is the one that's really benefited from the last 3 years.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Bob, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Well, it's always a pleasure to join you, Jim.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to have you with us again. Give us your website again one more time.
Please join me at creditcardnation.com.
Thanks, Bob. Credit Card Nation, that's the book. Check it out wherever books are sold. MANNING, Robert D. Manning. Thanks, Robert. See you next time. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.